Question: have you ever felt invisible? Have you ever felt invisible, like you're just not seen? Like God doesn't somehow see you, like you're there but not really there? There's a time in my life when I felt like that. I felt like God had literally abandoned me. I felt like God had walked out on me. I was just not there, just invisible. I was in New York. I was working with the largest Sunday school in the world. It was like 30,000 kids every Sunday and 60,000 kids at Christmas. I was watching the Twin Towers fall down from my roof and then served people at Ground Zero the next day. And to top it off, I was being followed by a film crew from London. And they decided that they would make me their guinea pig. They'd follow my every move. Like, literally, I remember 4 a.m. lying in bed in pitch black dark. And in New York, in the ghetto, in Brooklyn, Bushwick, there was this little tiny red dot in the room. I'm like, oh my goodness, there's a sniper in the room. And I'm like, what do I do? It's kind of like one eye's open, there's a little tiny red dot, and it's facing me. You know, it's not kind of on me, it's not moving, but it's there. And it was the cameraman, I basically got a key, came in, was waiting for me to wake up, and he's pointing a camera at my bed, waiting for me to get out of bed, because he knew we were getting up to sweep all the buses for the kids to be collected that day. Literally followed my every move. They were making a documentary, it was on Channel 5, and it was me that they were telling the story of the ministry through. And you know what? I felt really close to God. I felt so like best friends with God. I was busy pleasing God, doing some great stuff, really involved in it, really kind of loving it and buzzing. I felt amazing. But, of course, you know, at this time, it was like doing all this amazing stuff. It's like, of course God sees me. Of course God loves me. Of course I deserve God's love. Look at the stuff that I'm involved in. Amazing. There's a camera kind of there all the time. You know, how great am I? However, when I got back to the UK, the buzz of that just kind of started to fade. And I felt like I'd run this marathon with loads of people kind of cheering me on the sidelines and someone saying, yeah, you're doing great. And then all of a sudden, I just felt like I'd run into this empty field. And there was just no one there. The crowd wasn't there anymore. Nobody was cheering. Now, I was back in the UK. I'd moved back to Cheltenham, where my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, Katie, was doing a discipleship year out with Holy Trinity Cheltenham. And you know, Katie was growing massively in God. I was unemployed. Katie was being affirmed. I felt like I was being ignored. Katie was being mentored. I was feeling lonely. Katie was given ministry opportunities, and I signed on for Job Seeker's Allowance. And it was a difficult time. You know, with no film crew following me, with no attention, with nobody telling me how God was using me, I just felt invisible. I felt like somehow God had walked out and left me. I felt like an orphan. I felt like I wanted to jump up and down and say, God, notice me again, notice me, I'm here, God. And I realised it was mainly because I wasn't in a place where I was busy and pleasing God. Nobody was telling me how good I was. God wasn't using me like I thought he had been. I wasn't in ministry. But mainly I realised I was broken. You know, being busy was so important to me. Being busy doing good stuff or God stuff was just so important to me. And through prayer and counselling, you know, God showed me the root of this problem. I attended a couple of sessions at Holy Trinity Cheltenham, and these counsellors helped me trace it back to a point in my life when I was growing up. And they said this, they said, why don't you ask God to reveal when this started? I was like, okay. And we kind of waited quite awkwardly, and they're like, you know, has God revealed to you? I was like, no. Why don't you ask God to reveal, you know, how old you were when this happened? I was like, oh, no. So I kind of waited and waited and waited and waited a bit more. And then all I can say is that I got this massive number 3 sort of like suspended there. Just in my kind of mind's eye, I just saw the number 3. And I was like, well, I don't know how this works, but here we go. I think this thing started, the root of this started when I was 3. And I kid you not, they both turned around their notepad, their clipboard, and they both written down number 3, age 3. Like, yeah, I think it was when you were 3. What happened when you were 3? I don't know. Ask God. I was like, oh. You know, there's definitely a pattern kind of developing here. So I kind of waited on God, and I waited, and I waited. I was like, I don't know what happened when I was 3. What happened when I was 3? You know, I kind of blanked it with the 3 thing, but maybe God's in it. And I waited, and I waited, and then God reminded me of a time that my dad, you know, due to his mental illness, he couldn't and didn't give me any attention or affirmation. He couldn't affirm me, and he couldn't tell me that I was great, except for one day. one day he got out of bed, which he spent most of his life, got out of bed, came downstairs, picked me up, and he took me to a toy shop, and he bought me a gift. And it was this toy rifle. I always remember this toy rifle. My dad saw me. He noticed me. But you know the lie that I believed at that age? I believed this lie as a small child, that I must have done something great to get my dad's attention. I must have done something praiseworthy to deserve a gift. I must have been a good boy. Something that I did must have pleased my dad enough for him to get out of bed, see me, notice me, give me attention, and give me a gift. And you know, that was the lie that I projected onto God. I projected that lie onto God. I have to be doing something good. I have to be doing something great. I have to be doing God's work, good's work. I have to be told that I'm great for God to see me and notice me. And it's a lie that I carried throughout my young adult life. And now I was feeling the effects of that lie. I believed I had to be busy in ministry doing good stuff. Had to be great in Christian circles to exist. And you know, that was the starting for me of a healing journey. So after months of counselling and crying my eyes out about many different things in my childhood, God brought some healing to me. And not doing anything or trying to achieve anything, I heard these affirming words over me. This is my son, who I love, and I'm well pleased. Now, Pete mentioned that last week to me in his talk. He was talking about Jesus, that Jesus heard the same words over him. Jesus hadn't done anything. He hadn't done any miracles. He hadn't done anything that we think, wow. You know, and God just says, this is my son, I'm well pleased. I love him, and I'm well pleased. It's worth remembering that we don't have to do things in order for God to love us. God loves us, he's pleased with us, and before we do anything, he loves us. In one of the two creation stories that we have in Genesis, you know, Genesis 1 talks about man. And it said God created man. And before man had done everything, God gave him the plants, he gave him the fruits, he gave him the animals, and he gave him the land. Before man had done everything, God had given him all these things. He created all these things for man. He gave these things to man. And you know, man being created on the sixth day also meant that the first thing that man did was nothing but rest. Because God created on the seventh day, God rested. So man's starting point was rest. It's a place of just being with God. Just seeing what God's given him. Just seeing how much God loves him. Just experiencing God's love, his pleasure, his favour. Author and 20th century church leader, Watchman Nee, he's written this book. It's called Sit, Walk, Stand. And he draws out three key verbs from the book of Ephesians. Ephesians 1 and 2 says it's about sitting. We're seated in the heavenlies. Before we stand, we must remember we can only stand if we first sit. We can't operate fully if we haven't been affirmed, encouraged in our identity and our position. So sit there for a while. Sit there for a while. Sit and hear the words over you. I'm a child of God. God is for me. God is in me. God knows me and he loves me. He likes me. God is going ahead of me. God is my rock. God is my strength. God is my Father. And when we sit there, we'll experience all these things. And we'll be able to stand because we're sitting in his presence, sitting in the affirmation that the Father gives and speaks over us. We'll be more secure in our faith. We'll be more secure Christians. We'll be sure of it. We'll be firm in our faith and we'll be able to stand. Ephesians 4 and 5 then talk a bit more about walking. Walking in step with the Spirit. So staying in step with God. And Ephesians 6 talks about standing. But it starts with sitting. Sitting, then walking, then being able to stand. Stand in the truth. Stand against the things that the world throws us. You know, Watchman Nee also says this in his book. It's paradoxical but true that we only learn to advance in the Christian life as we learn, first of all, to sit down. So it's important to sit and to hear the things of God. You know, the temptation of trying to earn God's love and please him, I know too well, and it's knackering, and it's just soul-destroying. You know, but not having to earn his love or his favour, not having to please him by how successful we think we're being or becoming, especially in London, you know, get this job, become that, do that, get that wage, get whatever, and we'll become something, maybe we'll become seen or noticed, but God just loves you before you get out of bed. He just loves you. Before each morning then, just remind yourself to sit in God's presence, to hear things spoken over you, Chew over the scriptures. Chew over the things that you know are right. Chew over the things that are encouraging. Whatever's pure, whatever's right, whatever's praiseworthy, whatever's admirable, whatever's good. Think about such things. Chew them over and let them wash over you. And hear them words. This is my child who I love and I'm well pleased. However, you know, we find competing voices, don't we? Conflicting messages that cram up our time. We find ourselves being busy, 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 busy being, trying to be seen all the time. Busy trying to feel valued. I know I do at times. As people, we're so busy trying to do stuff and trying to achieve things. You know, apparently there's a 10% increase in the pace that we walk. So we walk 10% faster than we do in the night than we did in the 90s. It's crazy, isn't it? We walk 10% faster than we did in the 90s. And we find ourselves texting while we're walking, you know, drinking while we're walking, texting while we're driving, hopefully not. But there's certain things that we do because I've got enough time, I've got enough time, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. You know, we sit on the toilet, we do our emails because I've got time to poo, I've got to do my emails. You know, it's constantly busy, 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 busy. You know, there's certain cultures, there's certain countries that they can't get their head around a coffee to go. You know, why coffee to go? Why to go? Like, you're having a coffee to go. You're having a coffee meeting to go. You're getting coffee and you're walking, and that's not a meeting. Can't you just sit for a while? Can't you just sit face to face with someone? Can't you just stop? Can't you just rest? Can't you just listen? Can't you just be in the moment? Everything's to go, isn't it? Everything's to go. Text while you go, pay as you go, everything's go, 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 busy, 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 busy. But I'd encourage you just to rest. The first hour of the talk could be rest. You know, rest. Rest in his presence. Okay, need to be creative now. I'm going to have another drink. Imagine this scenario, okay? I don't blame the devil for many things, but imagine this scenario. Imagine that Satan called this worldwide convention, okay? This is his plan, okay? And this is just us imagining, but imagine this scenario, okay? In his address, it says this. Let them go to their churches. Let them have their fix. But steal their time. So they don't have time to develop relationship with Jesus. This is what I want you to do. This is him speaking to all his friends or whatever, his demons. Distract them from getting in hold of God and maintaining that vital connection through their day. Keep them busy in the non-essential things of life. And invent a number of schemes to occupy their minds. Tempt them to spend, 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 spend. And borrow, 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 borrow. Persuade the wives to go to work for long hours. And the husbands to work 6 to 7 days a week. 10 to 12 hours a day. So that they can afford their empty lifestyles. Keep them from spending time with their children. As their families fragment, soon their homes will offer no escape from the pressures of work. Overstimulate their minds so that they can't even hear the still small voice. Entice them to play the radio when they drive. Keep the TVs, DVDs, CDs, PCs ongoing constantly in their homes. Fill the coffee tables with magazines and newspapers. Pound their minds with 24-hour news a day. Invade their driving moments with billboards. Flood their mailboxes with junk mail. Mail order catalogues, sweepstakes, every kind of newsletter and promotional offer, free products, services and false hopes. Give them headaches too. In their recreation, let it be excessive. Have them return from their recreation exhausted. Keep them too busy to go out into nature and reflect on God's creation. Send them to amusement parks, sporting events, plays, concert, movies. Instead, keep them busy, 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 busy. And when they meet for spiritual fellowship, involve them in gossip and small talk so that they leave troubled. Crowd their lives with so many causes, they have no time to seek the power of God. Soon they'll be working in their own strength, sacrificing their health and their family for the cause of good. It'll work. It's quite a plan. The things mentioned in there, you know, they're not all bad, are they? You know, coffees and magazines. They're not bad in of themselves, of course not. But it's when we allow our lives to be crammed with so much stuff, we can't breathe. When we allow our lives to be so full of stuff, there's no time for anything else, especially God. You know, Bono once asked Archbishop Desmond Tutu, do you ever get any time for prayer and meditation? With a big grin, Desmond Tutu replies, what are you talking about? Do you think we'd be able to do all this stuff if we didn't? Here's a question then, a couple of questions. When was the last time, I'm speaking to myself here, when was the last time you switched your mobile phone off? When was the last time you switched your mobile phone off? I know for some of you, because I'm starting to feel panicky now, that panics you. I can't switch my phone off. What's the point? What's the point? When was it? There you go. That's my wife. It was actually my wife's phone. Got it. When was the last time, Katie, you switched your phone off? When was the last time you powered down your laptop? I don't power down my laptop. I literally let it run and run and run until it dies. Then I recharge it. I never shut it down. I just let it keep going all the time. We can be hyperactive people, can't we? Now, I found myself the other day flushing the toilet before I'd finished weeing. I was like, what am I doing? What am I doing? I'm in such a rush. I'm flushing and there's still more wee to come. And it's like, this is mental. You know, which resulted in a double flush, which is a waste of water, and then it's expensive, so it's annoying. We find ourselves in such a rush, having to do things quickly, quickly, quickly. You know, Pete called Katie, my wife, recently. And, you know, Pete told me, I was, Katie, hey, Katie, just quickly. And Katie was like, why just quickly? He was like, what? I was like, why just quickly? She was like, often when you're in a conversation, Pete, the first thing you say is, Katie, just quickly. She's like, why just quickly? And he's like, you're right. Like, absolutely right. Like, I often just come at things like, just quickly, hey, just quickly, just kind of, just quickly. And this was a real thing because, you know, Pete kind of looked at it and he's like, yeah. And he finds himself apologising now. He gets a smacked wrist in the office if he does that, in the office. But just this thing of like, we want to do things, just quickly, just quickly. But Pete's actually great at kind of seeing that, hearing that, and actually wanting to see change. You know, love is slow, isn't it? Let's do the small things beautifully. Have time for art. Have time for coffees in. For music. For love. For you. To love Paul more. Not you love me more, but love yourself more, you know? Have time to love yourself more. To hear what's going on in your head. I spoke to a married couple at Seek First, one of the first ones that they did. And he was saying that as a couple, they just love doing certain things that kind of bring them to life and the things they're interested in. And they were saying that they had a week in London and they basically holidayed in London, did all the things that were great in London. Like, you know, one of the things that we love doing is going to the cinema. So we went to the cinema and watched three films back to back. And I was like, wow. And they're like, it was brilliant. We did the first one, then we had something to eat, we talked about. Went to the second one, then we did popcorn course, then we did the third one. And you could see that this was something that they loved. They spent time on themselves, you know, just carving out time and loving it. Pete Gregg, who has written a number of books and runs the prayer at HDB, you know, he had the most revelation and vision, he says, when he was wasting time travelling around Europe in a camper van. In fact, he ended up with the material for a book that he wrote called Red Moon Rising when he was off, away, and on downtime. It's interesting, you know, that when we stop and when we rest, when we hear that still small voice, when we clear out and carve out time, you know, it can be often when God speaks. You know, even in the Bible, you know, it's the first thing that the Bible calls holy, the Sabbath, the day off, the rest. That's the first thing the Bible calls a holy thing, it's the day of rest. You know, Pete said earlier, but August 9th of KXC is, it tends to be quiet. It tends to have no major events running, no hubs, just the opportunity to seek first, as the slide shows. But just to carve out that time, just to go and seek God, just to rest in God, to hear what he has to say over us. Okay, second section then is another R, and it's review or reassess. You can choose whichever one you want. And for this, we're going to get a little bit creative. If you've got a pen and paper, brilliant, get them out. If you've got a phone, you maybe want to do this. We're going to do a little test. It's just a way of kind of assessing where you're at. It's not a right, wrong thing. But you could do it as a text. You could text yourself at the end of it so you can look at it on Monday morning and kind of think about it. You could write it in a note. You could write it on the back of a gift aid, but that would be a bit annoying. It's fine, you could do that if you want. So get a pen. These are the things, okay? We heard this at New Wine, and I thought this is a great, great way of just looking at where we are, reviewing where you are with God in life today. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to talk about the fruits of the Spirit. So there'll be nine things that we'll go through. And after each one, you need to put either an E, which is I'm excellent at this stage in my life, a G, which is I'm actually quite good at that at this stage of life, and N, needs improvement. It's all positive. You know, you're not going to get a big X, you're not going to fail, But it's just a way of looking at where you're at this stage in life. Okay, so if you want to type, write, tweet, whatever you do, the word love. Okay, that's the first one, love. Write the word love. Are you a loving person right now? You know, if August's a quiet time, okay, it's a good time to assess where you're at, to review where you're at this stage, in the middle of the year, just over. Are you loving? Are you experiencing love at the moment? Are you projecting and giving love? Are you loving? Are you excellent? E. Are you good? Or do you need a bit of improvement? So it's either an E, a G, or an N. Number two then, joy. Are you joyful? You know, the small things bringing you joy. At this phase in your life, are you excellent? I'm excellent at joy at this phase of my life. I'm good at it. I'm a G. N needs a bit of improvement. We're all going to be different. We're all at different stages, different phases of life. Third then, peace. In quiet moments, are you peaceful or anxious? Peace. Do you have peace? How much peace do you have now? Are you experiencing a peace that goes beyond your understanding? Excellent, good, or do you need improvement? Patience. Are you somebody in Sainsbury's who's like, I've got to get the quickest queue, and then you join the queue and that goes really slowly and it absolutely makes your blood boil? Like, you know, are you the person that's in the car and the second it turns green, you're beeping your horn because a stupid person in the front hasn't gone? Are you patient? Are you excellent? Good. Needs improvement. Okay, number five, kindness. Would a friend at this stage in your life, this month, this week, would they say, yeah, you're kind? You're kind. Would your neighbour or your friend describe you as kind? Six, generosity. Fruit of the Spirit. Are you generous? Have you given somebody a gift recently for no reason? Are you being generous? Excellent, good, do you need improvement? Faithfulness. Again, being faithful, do you feel like you're being faithful? The fruit of faithfulness growing in your life. G, gentleness. Are you hard-hearted at the moment? Are you gentle with people's hearts at the moment? People's emotions? Are you quite harsh? Quite snappy? Snapdragon, as my mum used to say. You know, you're fiery. Are you gentle? And then finally, self-control. Are you easily led astray? Do you have self-control at this phase of your life? Is that fruit growing at this stage of your life? Excellent, good, or needs improvement? And then if you've sent it as a text, look over it, or if you've written it down, just look and see where you're at. And there's no right or wrong answers. You don't have to feel anything about it, good, bad, or whatever. It's just where you're at, you know? You might have a lot of E's, you might have a lot of G's, you might have a lot of N's. And it's just something to just kind of take stock. This is where I'm at. This is where I feel I'm at the moment. We were surprised when Casey and I did that. It's good to take stock, to rest, but in this time of August, just to say, whereabouts am I at in life and with my faith, with my journey, with my friends? Where am I at? You know, for me, to be totally honest, I'm up and down. In August, this time of year, where I'm at right this moment, sometimes I'm on top of the world, absolutely on top of the world, and other times I'm really low. For me personally, I'm still dealing a year on with the sudden death of my dad. Like, it's still a thing. You know, it's been a year, and it's taken a year. It's finally sunk in. But a year on, people have stopped asking me, obviously, because it's been a year. It was a year ago. But for me, it's like yesterday, because it's just sunk in, you know. So I recently had a shocker of a week. Listen to this for a week or so. So my grief counselling that I was doing stopped. Then it was my birthday, and I was aware that my dad didn't give me a birthday because he's now no longer with us. Then it was my dad's birthday. Then it was the anniversary of my dad's death. Then it was Father's Day. Oh, and every card that I saw in a shop, every advert I seen on the tube was like a shard of glass in my heart. It's painful. And I don't know about you, but when life's hard, my default position is to run to some old school Radiohead tune and listen to some tunes that recognise the pain in me. You know, that's what I want to do. I go and I get all my CDs out, I get on Spotify, and I click on the songs and I wallow. In some ways, it's bad medicine. It's bad medicine. It's not good for me at all. It doesn't encourage me. It doesn't affirm me. It just fuels the sort of pain I'm feeling. And again, music's not bad, is it? I love music. But when it's used in the wrong way, it's not always helpful. My default position isn't always to go and dig out a worship CD, you know? I'd rather listen to Radiohead than Rent Collective or whatever it is, you know? But my grief counsellor, however, said this. You need to find some time to seek God. You need to sit in his presence. You need to hear his voice. And you need to be with him. And you need to encourage yourself. David in the Bible, in 1 Samuel, it says this: David encouraged himself in the Lord. So David was with all his men, and they came to a place. They came to a place called Ziklag, and they found the whole place burnt. Okay, David in the Bible, you know, with all his guys, all his troops, they came and they found the place burnt. His wife was taken, and his kids were killed. Okay, pretty bad at the moment. Okay, and after intense grieving, David's men considered stoning him. So David, lonely and discouraged, did what? It says he sought and found comfort and strength in the Lord. He didn't listen to Radiohead. No, I didn't say that. He strengthened himself in the Lord. Like, wow. All that happened and David went to God. Like, when stuff happens, when the poo hits the fan for me, often that's not where I go, but I'm trying and I want to be there. I'm aiming for that. Instead of digging a hole, he fled to God. He rediscovered God, his Redeemer. He found help, repair for his soul. He encouraged himself in the Lord. We can see in Psalm 13 that David talks about this. He says, "How long, Lord, will you forget me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts? And day after day have sorrow in my heart." And then a little bit further down the psalm, it says this: "But..." There's a few buts in the Bible. It's important to notice them buts. "But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he is good and he's with me." Wow, amazing. Amazing that David could do that. "But because of this is happening, therefore, but I will, as for me, I will do this, seeking God." Okay, finally then, the final I's, receive. During the sort of period of my grief counselling, the grief counsellor had this image for me of me reaching for an oxygen mask. You know the thing that pops down on the plane? And I always thought, like, how annoying is that? Like, the picture says the thing pops down, you put the mask on yourself before you put it on your kids. How selfish is that? Like, why would you put it on you before the kids? But she's like, no, you've got to look after yourself. If you pass out, who's going to put the mask on the kids? Like, you've got to look after yourself and do that. But she had this image of the oxygen mask, and she said, "You need to reach for your oxygen mask. You need to reach for the breath and life. You need to find space to encourage yourself in God. So I can be a better husband. So I can be a better husband, son, father, brother, and friend." I recently came across this quote from a guy called George Adams. And he says this: "Encouragement is the oxygen of your soul. Encouragement is the oxygen of your soul." It's important that we reach for the oxygen mask, that we receive from God the encouragement that we need to be able to breathe. It's life-giving breath that keeps us alive. You know, we need to plan for it. We need to put it in our diary. We need to prioritize for it, and we need to fight for it. We need to fight for it, because so many things compete. We need to fight for it. We have to stand and stand firm. When I was in my teens and growing up in my early 20s, I got newfangled and I got really into martial arts. I just wanted to do martial arts. So I did kickboxing for a few years, and then I didn't want to do that scrap, but I wanted to do kung fu that Bruce needed. So I specialised in kung fu. And I did quite a few belts. I was kind of getting quite good and getting into it. And I used to come out from the kung fu things. I wanted to look for a fight. It wasn't good. But I was just in this mentality of like, yes, fight. And I kind of got healthy and I got fit, and it was good for me. It was just a total mind shift. And you know, recently, I've been trying to start up again for a number of reasons. Now, I've hit my 30s, so I either get fat or get fit, you know. I've got a couple of options. That's one of the reasons. But one of the reasons is it's just this thing of like getting healthy, getting fit, enjoying things that I enjoy. But I just want to learn to fight again. Like, for me, I think there's a correlation between learning to fight physically and how I learn to fight spiritually and emotionally. It's so easy for me to sit back and sit down and just be beaten. I want to rise up. I want to get stronger. I want to encourage myself. I want to be fit. And I want to fight. I want to fight for rest with God. I want to fight for the oxygen mask. I want to fight to be fed. I want to fight to be in relationship with and remain in that relationship. Karl Barth, a Swiss theologian, said this: "To be a Christian and to pray means the same thing. Not a thing which we can be left to our own impulses. It's a necessity. Just as breathing is a necessity to live, praying is like oxygen, it's a necessity. There's a guy that I know, American guy, he got so busy in his day, he'd normally really good at kind of meeting with God. And at the end of the day, after a really busy day, he was lying in bed just about to close his eyes. He felt God come close to him and just say, I had something for you today. I had something for you today. God's got something for us each day. And when we spend time with him, we receive all his peace, his love, his joy, his words of affirmation. You know, find a place. Don't feel bad about quiet times. I feel bad when people say, oh, if you had a quiet time. I was brought to in camps where people were like, your morning quiet time, you know, an hour before. And I just never did it, you know. I always like the lie-in. But, you know, don't feel bad about the quiet time. But find something that works for you where you can meet with God. For me, I'm going to be honest, it's in the bath. It's having a bath. I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I lock the door. It's just me and the Lord. And you know, I just pretty much make it into a personal spa, okay? Listen, I have candles, I have oils, I have white fluffy towels and talc, I have dressing gowns and health drinks, and I've recently dabbled with a little bit of Zen music. I'm not joking. It's not a joke. I kind of did the whole thing, you know? I quite like, Katie walked in, she's like, whoa, it's like a steam room, and it smells lovely, and the fluffy towels everywhere, and there's talc everywhere. But it's kind of my time. It's my time with God. The interesting thing is, though, you know, I kind of did all this thing, and I was like, I need to have something else, I need fruit drink. I think one time I had grapes, and I was feeding myself grapes in the bath. But I did everything, and I went to the Zen music, and I did everything on the outside, but I just didn't connect with God. And the one thing I wasn't doing was listening to worship music, and it's been a fight, but I'm having a bit of Tim Hughes in the bath. I'm having a bit of Tim Hughes music and people hit worship music in the bath. And it's great. It's great. You've got to do it. Jesus says, come to me, all of you who are weary, and I'll give you rest. We'll delete that out of the podcast, don't we? But we need to learn to breathe. You know, we need to learn to find a place in the busyness of life to rest, to review, and to receive, to breathe, you know? A friend of mine who I studied theology with, he co-wrote this book called The Punk Monk, The Art of Breathing. And in the book, I'm finishing with this, but he explains about a tradition that the Maori people held. The Maori people perform this thing called a hongi. A hongi is a traditional Maori greeting in New Zealand. In the hongi, the word ha means the breath of life, and it involves these things: the nose, the forehead, and a handshake. Okay, you're never going to see this again ever, but I'm going to perform a hongi with Pete. Pete, come on up. Okay, this is how a hongi works, okay? But have you got a mint? Get a mint, because we get very close. Just kidding. Okay, so what we do is, so come close, okay? So in New Zealand, the Maori people do this. This is a greeting, traditional greeting, okay? So we put foreheads together. We'll do it in a minute, because it'll be awkward. Put foreheads together, noses touch, okay? Let's not do the breath thing, but we breathe each other's breath, and we do a handshake, okay? Who would have thought you'd have turned up kicks and two fingers performing a hongi at the front, okay? Here we go. So it's head,
nose,
and Pete's had coffee. I think we've got a picture of a hongi. There you go. Prince Charles performed hongi recently. There's actually a hongi hall of fame if you want to Google this. But let me explain the hongi. Okay, there you go. Looking quite awkward. Let's go back to the black and white one. It's more creative. So in the book, they explain this. You touch noses to exchange the ha, the breath of life. You breathe the same breath as the person. You touch foreheads to share your dreams and aspirations with each other. And you do the handshake because you welcome each other as a citizen to the land. So here's my thing. Have a hongi with God. Okay, have a hongi with God. If you can tweet anything about this talk, tweet this. I'm having a hongi with God. No, what it means. But listen to this, okay? The nose. Find some space and some time. Breathe God's breath of life. It's his spirit, okay? There's echoes of this. Jesus doing this to his disciples, breathing the breath, breathing the spirit. God breathed the breath of life and made Adam and people alive. Okay, so breathe God's breath. It says in the Bible, then the Lord formed man and the dust of the ground, and he breathed into the nostrils of the man, and the man became a living creature. Spend time with God, breathe his breath, it's life-giving. Ask God to fill you with his spirit, that's his breath. Okay, second then, foreheads, okay? To share your dreams and aspirations with each other. The Apostle Paul says this, who can know the Lord's thoughts? Who knows enough to teach him? But we understand these things. For we have the mind of Christ. It also talks about being transformed with the renewing of your mind. What an amazing image to have a hunger with God, to receive his breath, his spirit, but to align your thoughts with his thoughts, to say, God, I'm thinking a certain thing, but I need you to change my thoughts. I need you to renew my mind. I need you to transform my mind. I need you to help me see people how you see them and think about this situation how you think about it. And then finally, the handshake. Through the exchange of this physical greeting, one is no longer considered, this is in New Zealand, one is no longer considered a visitor, but rather one of the people of the land. Have a hunger with God. Yeah, breathe his breath, think his thoughts, allow him to realign them, but shake his hand and receive that welcome. Take hold of who you are in God. Receive his affirmation. Receive the welcome into all that he has for you and all that he says about you. The Apostle Paul says this, once you had no identity as a people, but now you are God's people. You're welcomed as a citizen. And then finally then, just this image of a log fire. If having a honky with God is like standing by a warm fire, that it warms your soul, that it renews your mind, that you breathe his breath, that you receive your identity and your citizenship. If that warms you like standing close to a warm fire, if you then turned and hugged somebody, I think they'd feel that warmth. I think they'd feel that warmth. And as we rest in August, as we have our hungers with God, as we receive, you know, people are going to see that. People are going to experience that warmth because we're going to be changed. We're going to be renewed. Amen. Why don't we stand?